You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of December 1st, 2021. And if you play your cards right, you might just beat Inscription.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Alborn.
My name is Scott Juster.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a series been a humorless conversation about video games. That is this conversation, and we're having it around a wooden table in a dark, dark cabin.
I'm just going to slide this knife across this wooden table menacingly for a while.
We are talking about a recent game I played and finished. You played. I don't think you finished it, right?
We'll talk about it.
It is called Inscription. This is from Daniel Mullins Games. It was published by Devolver Digital. This is an indie designed game. I think Daniel Mullins has a pretty small team working on this game. Yep. And it is a horror deck building video game with a little bit of sprinkling of like escape the room style puzzles.
Yeah.
That is added into it. Don't think there are too many examples of this, right? A horror deck builder?
Yeah, I mean, the aesthetic is certainly different from any of the other types of, like, you know, Hearthstone-style games that are out there.
Right. So we will follow the normal debrief conversation path here. So we will talk a little bit about the game, some of our unbiased, or rather our biased, non-spoiler thoughts. Yeah. However, Inscription has a lot of spoilers from a narrative perspective. It also has quite a few spoilers from a game mechanics perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll probably have to get into it pretty quick. But just to start us off, tell me your experience with this. You jumped in. How long did you play? When did you clock out?
I played for like 12 hours. And ironically, I think I quit pretty much close to the end.
You definitely did, because I played for about 12 hours and I saw the end. So.
Yeah. But I was to the point where we'll get to this in kind of spoilers, but like you basically have to do the same thing. You have to have like basically four big fights three times in the game.
Yes.
And I was like, I'm good. Like, I know exactly. I think I know how this is going to go down. And so I actually just watched the rest of it on YouTube. And there was actually.
And you were not wrong.
Yeah. There was a little bit more than I thought there was. And the fights were a little bit different than I thought they would be. But after I enjoyed watching the fights as much as probably more than I would have enjoyed playing them, because they were just fun to see the mechanics of. But I could really see me getting annoyed by the, you know, bad rolls or whatever, and I would just have to start over and do it again. And ironically, I think those last fights, just watching them, even if I were to have failed them, it would have been less punishing than the very first part of the game, which is actually what kind of burned me out on it a little bit.
Right. So you're saying you got burned out in that first act, because the game is basically set up in three acts, I would say.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like a three-act structure. And they change the mechanics a little bit. But in a weird way, I think the first act is the most punishing. And so I spent a lot of my time and patience on that first one, which I will go into it. But I actually think there's some pretty strong stuff in there. I was flagging, and there's a couple other games I wanted to play. And I was like, okay, I get what this game is doing. I want to see where it ends. So I'm just going to go. I'm going to do this in, you know, 20 minutes versus two more hours, you know?
Yes. Yeah. So the first part of the game is the sort of baseline, right? This is where you first encounter the mechanic where you are having a deck that you randomly draw cards, or you could always sort of draw from a secondary pile. Yep. It's like a board game. Numerous board games do this. Mage Wars, I think, is like a similar idea. There are lanes. You lay your creatures in the lane. They attack each other. And if you attack through or trample over or fly over or whatever, then you will eventually shift the scales or deplete enough hit points from your enemy to win. That's the basic idea.
Yeah.
And then the room itself you can stand up from, and there's like different puzzles hidden around the room. Like you, you're right. I think the brunt of the gameplay experience was probably spent in that first hut. And I think by a pretty wide margin, it's the best material. Like, I think the mechanics itself works really well.
Yeah.
There's just enough for it to be enticing. In addition to the card laying mechanic and the sort of battling mechanic, there's an over map
Yeah.
That lets you choose which way to go, and depending on what decision you make, it will impact your run. So some of them you can find and choose from a selection of three random cards. Sometimes you choose a card that's sort of based on a tribe because there's tribal synergies, so you can get like insects or lizards or whatever.
Yep.
Some of them, you know, you can push your luck and put your talking character by a campfire, for example, one of your cards, and increase its power. Like that kind of thing, I thought worked really well. It was very atmospheric.
Yeah.
I thought it really worked. I loved the idea that when you die, the sort of roguelite element to it is that you could potentially, although not guaranteed, find the card that you make from that character's death. Because your death cards, I don't know about you, but those death cards, I mean, that's the moneymaker right there. Like, some of those cards are insane. Like, zero hearts to play is like a 7/7 that attacks in three lanes. Like, incredible stuff, right? So you can get that and really luck out and have that empowered role. But, you know, during that segment, you know, I don't know about you, but I was like, this game is great. I love it. This is awesome. Mm-hmm. And when I beat this final boss, because there are a bunch of different bosses with different mechanics, and when you beat them, you can use some of their mechanics on future runs, which I also thought was kind of cool.
Yep.
I was like, man, when I finish this final boss, I'll be like, great. This game was rad. I see why people loved it. And then it just, something happens and it keeps going. And I started to, I want to be careful how I talk about Inscription, because I have a lot of respect for the designer.
Totally. I think
there's a ton of work here. There's a ton of thought here from a narrative and mechanics perspective. There's a lot of care put into it. I think the game really shines, and I can absolutely see why a lot of people love this game and dive into the lore. Like, there's an ARG that's part of this game experience also, and I could see why people would buy into that.
Yep.
But as the game went on, it just felt like it was unnecessarily bloated, retrod mechanics with slight twists that were ultimately uninteresting or insufficiently explored.
Right.
And I started getting more and more displeased with my overall Inscription thoughts. Because when that first cabin section ended, I thought, this is great. I love this. This is a short little indie game.
Yep.
Right. And then it kept going and it became this sort of, The classic indie game that is sometimes easy to poke fun of because it's unnecessarily convoluted and it's up its own ass and it's too clever for its own good, you know? And I feel mean saying that, but I think there are a lot of problems with the way that this game just progresses more and more and more.
Yeah. I mean, even before we get there, I thought that first section, well, at times I was very frustrated by it, but when I realized there was kind of roguelite elements and persistence to it, I was like, oh, okay, so, you know, it's probably pretty rare that you're able to, like, through a combination of just random rolls and the fact that your deck doesn't have a bunch of good characters in it yet, you're probably not going to just one-shot your way through all of these people. And so you're meant to fail a few times, and it's even built into the game that there's, like, narrative things that pop up when you start to fail and, you know, you start to do some more of those, like, meta puzzles or whatever. And so once I clued into that, I got a lot more patient with the actual game.
Puzzles are fun. Like, they're kind of cool little clever world in fiction puzzles.
I think it combines knowledge of things that you see in the card games, and you're like, oh, right, like, he told me about this piece of info, and therefore I can slide these tiles in this configuration, and this door will unlock, and this will give me a new card, and I can immediately take that back into the game, and, you know, all that stuff. I thought the game itself, especially in the first third, was a simple but strong card game. And I don't really like card games that much, and I don't really like deck building games a huge amount, but I really enjoyed, because to your point, that there's, you know, there's like four lanes wide and two lanes deep, basically.
Yeah.
And so it's simple. Like, there's not a lot to it, but they do a lot with the different types of cards. You know, some, to your point, some of them can attack diagonally. Some of them, you can, if you sacrifice your card to, like, get a better card on the board, the sacrificed card goes right back into your deck, you know, into your hand, so you can play it again. And so you can start to do these really cool, you know, 2 to 3 to 4 step loops of, you know, playing a card and really linking it up with a bunch of other cards, which I thought was very neat. I also thought just the scale, the mechanic of the scale, where like it starts, the scale starts at zero, and if it gets to like negative six, you lose, and if it gets to positive six, you win.
Yeah.
But that means that you have to like, you know, if you are three in the hole, you're in debt, and you need to, you actually need to get nine points to win. You know, like, I thought that's an interesting mechanic. You know, like that's kind of cool.
Well, it makes for some really exciting moments where you know that you're probably hosed, but if you can think through and get that damage just up to six,
right,
you'll survive. Or there are those areas where you hang yourself because you get into your mind like, oh, I'm going to build an engine, and then you're just murdered by flyers. Like, oh, you just didn't think about that hard enough. And all of the information is there. Your opponent will lay out the cards that they will play on their following turn for you.
Yeah.
Outside of boss battles, for the most part, like which, you know, add some weird tricks to it. So if you lose, it's kind of your fault. I mean, sometimes it's luck of the draw. Of course, you just draw trash. But generally speaking, I think there's ways to think it through, essentially.
Yeah. I like that stuff, and especially once I kind of clued into what the different cards do, and you know, some cards you need to sacrifice to get others on the board. Some cards you need to use an alternate currency to get onto the board, which and I think those currencies work pretty well together. And I like the idea
no bones
of like,
about it.
I like the three item things, you know, the emergency, like the emergency ripcord, where it's like, crap, I really need one extra card. I'm going to use one of my emergency items. It's going to be gone for the rest of the run, but that's fine. You know, like,
And some of them are pulling your own teeth out to add to the scale. Like, stuff like that is really cool. I mean, it's creepy, but it's very neat.
And the aesthetic of the whole thing, you know, the mysterious opponent that you have, you know, the kind of, you know, prison, the one room prison or whatever that you're in. Yeah. I thought was good. All of that stuff was strong.
And even the way that your opponent is, it's like one guy who swaps out wooden masks.
Yes.
You know, and there's like a tactile feel to that world. It feels like you're engaging in a sort of fairy tale retelling of the events that led you to the cabin that you're in, which you are, right?
Yeah.
That's a really cool moment. Yeah.
It's a kind of your opponent's like a dungeon master that has been, you know, has gone fully insane and also is all powerful. And so, you know, he puts on his mask to like pretend that he's another person, but you still know he's pulling the strings behind everything that's going on.
I'm glad I told you to play this game because there is a sort of, I mean, the reason I suggested it is because this game has like multiple arcs. Like there's so many different emotions and perspectives that I had while playing this game, both just based upon the story that it's telling as well as the intricacies of the overall plot and then the twists and turns that it goes through. Like there's not, and that's one of the reasons why I'm trying to be gentle with my heavy criticism because I respect folks that shoot for the stars, you know?
Oh, and I
do think that this game really aims to put it all out there. Right.
Yeah. Well, and I'll kind of offer a backhanded compliment, which is Mullins is clearly so talented and so smart that it's too much, you know, the fact that that up until the end, he adds new mechanics to the card game where like, and you know, the beginning mechanics are just have so much stuff scaffolded on top of them by the end of this game where any one of those mechanics would be a legitimate card game to make.
Yeah.
And he makes three. And so it's like, you know, it's, and I totally respect that. It's just, I didn't need all three of those mechanics because especially the latter two one, I actually think that they're not as good mechanics as the first one. And two,
agreed,
they don't get the due that they are owed to really get fleshed out and to play around with them some more. Cause I think they're cool. Yeah. I just didn't spend enough time in them to really like, I don't know, to really enjoy them as much as I enjoyed the blood mechanic.
I think Act Two gives you the opportunity to explore with it more. Like the bone mechanic, I really leaned into in the second. Yeah, and that's a very cool, cool way of playing what is essentially the same game, but it's just an augmented set of cards. I mean, when all is said and done, the cards must total like hundreds, excluding cards that you can make that are custom in multiple points of the game, right?
Yeah.
So there's just a ton of variability there. I think in some ways this game is a victim of being indie and what those expectations are from indie player base, right?
Interesting.
Like, if you want to be especially in the horror genre, right? Like, if you want to be Five Nights at Freddy's, if you want to be of note, right? Having a story that breaks out of the mold, that is meta, that has these ARG elements, that can sort of break through that fourth wall, I think is what sort of catches your attention, right? And I think that the on top of that, there's already the sense of, you know, if I'm going to stand out in the indie space, I have to provide more value, more value, more value, right? I think it's really challenging to release an indie game and get noticed if all that you make is a simple, beautiful, elegant game, right?
I was thinking to myself that I kind of wanted a basically an infinite mode for that first third, where it's like, what if I just want to play some games of Inscription against the AI or whatever, you know?
Or versus.
Exactly, it's the card game itself was good, but it was I didn't expect the story to be the point of this game. And the card game is meant to serve that in some ways. I mean, really, that, you know, they're obviously a combination. Like, there's a fair amount of pretty good procedural rhetoric that is in this game, but I didn't expect the true point of the story to be the story. I thought it would be more of a card game with a cool aesthetic, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I wonder, like, what would you cut from this? I mean, we could talk about it in spoilers, but I'm curious, you know, I think that, okay, I think we should talk go into spoilers because...
Yeah, let's go into spoilers.
Okay, because there's so many little changes that I think are worth talking about in the context of this question. Okay, so from here on out, spoilers for Inscription.
Yeah.
Mechanically and narratively.
I would also say, like you told me, I would say this game is worth playing because even if you don't really like card games, which, I'm not a huge fan of card games. I thought it was pretty fun. I learned the mechanics. And also, I was intrigued by the story. There was just some structural things that kind of, jostled me on it. So, you know, definitely a recommend, but like, know that there is going to be some, there's a little bit of friction there.
Okay. So I'm going to layer on some of the elements, like the the double decker hoagie that is Inscription, right?
the KFC double
decker. KFC double decker. Yeah. So you've got the base game cabin, good stuff, solid, you know, 9 out of 10, right?
Yeah.
And then, in between these layers, right, the different layers of cheese is the sort of video, the IRL video narrative of this Luke Carter YouTuber discovering this game, getting looped into this whole fiasco, and eventually getting murdered for the insights he derived from playing this game, right? On top of that, in Act 2, the game shifts into a top-down, more RPG
like
style.
A JRPG early Final Fantasy look,
which I think itself is like a, you know, it's a very different aesthetic, but it's like its own thing. There's still the card game on top of it, but the puzzles are changed in terms of how the puzzles work because you now have a top-down environment to explore, and then they add in these additional mechanics that are hinted at based upon that each region, right? So we have the bones, we still have the animals up north, there's like the energy elements from, and then the mage with like the different types of magic, right? And then the third act, it goes back to the cabin style, but now it's like a future room of, like,
well, it's
robots.
Also an energy based mechanic versus a sacrifice based mechanic.
Exactly right. So, and which is very fundamental because you get an orb to spend every single time, right? You don't have to think about what are you going to sacrifice or what are you going to sort of what cheap things can you add to the board before you accrue the value that's on the board to play your cards, right? Which is, again, very different. And then on top of that, they also start adding back in the gems, the ability to customize your card, the sort of energy rows that will, like,
the circuits that you have to create.
Right, the circuits that add those other stuff. So, like, all of those layers just get added, right?
Yeah.
And so I was thinking, like, okay, so imagine a scenario where you need to make this game tighter, like a crisper game, right? But it needs to go past Act 1 because we want to keep this story, right? Like, what can you cut here, right? Because part of me is thinking, I think that it's surprising to go into the top-down JRPG element. On the other hand, it's the most different than the other two. Like, maybe it would just somehow, if we could somehow more easily patch your way into the board, because then you're really consistent in sticking with that approach, right? Like, you have the board in front of you, you lay your cards, you're good to go, right?
Yeah.
Versus the different bosses that you have to go to and the sort of the RPG elements of you fetch pictures to bring to this guy to unlock this path, right? Yeah. Which itself is not thoroughly explored, but it is an element on top of that. Or do you just do you cut the robot stuff, or you know, or do you instead trim back Act One and just say, look, if you're really going to get into it,
right,
and this game is going to be about the story, and it's going to be this meta narrative about how this robot launched the game that you yourself are playing,
yeah,
then maybe you just axe so much of Act One so that you could cut to the chase faster. You know, maybe you bring it down to one boss rather than three or four.
I was thinking about that, especially for Act One, where, like, having finally finished it, I was thinking back, and I don't know. Act One was no joke. I mean, I feel like I spent the majority of my time just getting through Act One, and the rest of them were much easier. Part of that was maybe just learning the game, and part of that was there were fewer options, so you really had to learn what they truly did versus, like, at the end of the game, I could just be like, my style of play is robots, so I'm just going to do whatever the best robots are, and I don't have to learn the other things, whereas you really have to learn the thing in Act One. But yeah, I mean, I was thinking in terms of how to condense things, my thought was, okay, if you turn it into a JRPG, fine, but make that a, like, mostly narrative sequence where you just walk around, talk, maybe you do some turn-based battling, you know, like a rudimentary Final Fantasy, like not even cards, or maybe you play the cards in your turns left and right, and it's like a time-based battle, like the old Final Fantasies were. Like, I thought that second act, there was way too much of it. And I actually think the game was
and we're forgetting in mechanics. Like, there's even the mechanic of,
for sure,
in the robot section where it's like the rotating boards, right? Every boss has their own mechanic that you learn and then have to execute in that whole region. It's not even just the boss. It's like that whole little nest where you're fighting people.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other thing that I realized, especially in the second act, there were so many cards and so many things to do with them. I just auto-completed my hand every time. I didn't spend much time at all choosing my deck because I was like, man, there's just so many here. Like, I'm not going to spend 2 hours like learning all of this stuff. And I'm glad I didn't, because then it all gets thrown away for the third act where, like, you don't choose your deck again. You know, it goes back to the first one where you just have a random deck, not a chosen hand, you know? It was a little bit of, it feels like there was some throwaway work as a player that you had to do in Act Two that didn't really serve you very well, especially if you didn't care about investing too heavily. I guess you have to learn how to use the gems, especially by the end. Like, everything does come together, but I think there's so much of it that it's a steep hill to climb by the end. Yeah. There is kind of like a Homer Simpson automobile vibe to the end of it, where there's just like everything, like the energy is here, the sacrifice is here, the gems are here, everything is here. And it's like, I love the simplicity of that first act, you know? Yeah. Right. 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 I think the minor quibbles I have with the game are actually more presentation than mechanic, where I did get a little fatigued of all of the various camera angles you had to scroll through to see everything.
Sure.
You know, where it's like, oh, now I need to scroll. I need to look at my hand. So I'm going to wheel the mouse button down. Then I'm going to wheel it back up to look at the other guy. Then I'm going to wheel it into the middle, but not the second middle, the third middle to get to my deck. You know, like I definitely, at a certain point, the aesthetic took over the functionality, where it's like, this is definitely not the most functional way of laying out a card game. It's a aesthetically pleasing and tonally evocative one, but god damn it if I didn't accidentally lay a lot of cards, you know. And there's no undo for that shit, you know. Like, once you click into something, you're kind of committed to it, which I'm fine.
It would be nice to have an undo button as one of the like break in case of emergency jars.
Something like that. Or even some of them where it's like, I'm of the school of thought with card games where like you laid it, you played it. Like if you lay a card down and remove your hand, it's locked. But there are some mechanics where if you select a card, that's it. You've selected it. You haven't even put it on the board yet, but you're like locked into that card. And it's like, ugh. Great. Now I fucked this up already, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or like even a quick restart would have been nice because now I need to basically just eat this round or try to suffer through it or whatever.
Yeah.
So there was just some things where it's like, okay, this makes a lot of sense. You know, this first person perspective of you acting as the player, looking at people's hands, going back and forth, like that makes a lot of sense. It does from a pure playability perspective, it does just throw some barriers up, which are definitely surmountable, but I noticed them and it slowed down the game for me because it's like I just want to see everything all at once to make these right choices, and I'm having to kind of like manually scroll through these cards because I'm holding them in a virtual hand, and it's like you know, I don't necessarily need that anymore, you know.
Or
I would have been fine with that in the first act, but by the act three I was like, okay, I get it. Like I fucking get it. Like this is a masterpiece of, you know, this is a masterful tone piece. I would still like to just see all my cards at the same time, you know.
I mean, you hit that wall, right, of what the game allows you to do, but at that point you're 10 hours in, you know. Mm-hmm. You've been playing this game a long time. You have some familiarity with it. I should say the implication, I think, of the way that we're talking about this is that they just add mechanics. They do remove mechanics also. One of the ones that they removed that I quite liked was the jars that I think it's I forget what her name is, like the trapper or the woodcarver.
Mm-hmm.
That will allow you to sort of augment different types of cards.
Yeah.
And it really, there's a moment in that first act where it feels like, depending on what cards you choose, you could sort of build a deck that is just yours, right? That is specialized or unique because, you know, like at one point, for example, I augmented all of my squirrels to have the spikes on them. So when they were hit, you would do damage.
Yeah.
Super satisfying, right? Because I could set up a bunch of traps that way, and I leaned in on those types of cards, and it was a cool run because it felt very different and special, right?
Yeah.
That is removed, and as the game progresses and they add more mechanics, the ability for you to specialize, I think, is reduced even more.
Mm-hmm.
In the last act, you can start adding energy to cards and customizing a little bit that way.
Yeah.
And some of the cards that you draw will like add a different type of, or gem, I guess, add a different type of gem to your board. But but that act runs its course before you can really get through that.
Mm-hmm.
So it never really allows you to have that same sensation that you've specialized or you've made like a spicy deck of your own style.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and again, I think that's the case of like this game is actually more about the narrative than I thought it would be.
Yep.
Because it's not about your deck. It's about this crazy fucking Nazi cursed data that they found, you know? Like, yeah.
Yeah. So on the story side, a couple of things that I did like. I really liked the boss fight where you can upload images.
And
files from your computer that would then show on the face of your opponent that you're fighting. At one point, it looks at your Steam friends list and adds some of those users as the card image to the cards that you are facing. I thought that was kind of neat. I got a very Metal Gear Solid vibe.
I was about to say that there's a lot of like Kojima and Frog Fractions energy in this game.
A lot of Frog Fractions energy for sure.
Yeah.
And story-wise, like I think it's kind of funny that the game is kind of about this YouTuber, you know, like a YouTuber. Yeah. There's so many YouTubers that their bread and butter is playing horror games or playing card games.
Or opening fucking decks to look for rares, you know?
Sometimes I watch people open packs of cards because it's kind of a fun, satisfying background image thing to have in the back of your, you know, your workday. I play a lot of Magic the Gathering, so those types of card influencers exist out there. It's kind of funny to have that personality be the focal point of a horror video game.
Well, and I thought the actor who played that Luke Carter, I thought the actor who played him really nailed the influencer style, even from the or not influencer, YouTuber style of
sure.
The tone of his voice, the cadence, how he would address the audience. I thought it was very, you could put that person in YouTube and just, you know, have him open Pokemon cards and it would be totally natural.
Yeah, man. Like and subscribe. I'd follow.
So I'm kind of a sucker for this sort of story because I think it's just fun to see. It's almost like a mystery. I just want to see how they do it. You know, I want to see how everything fits together and if he can pull it off. And so, you know, the story is essentially this influencer finds an old floppy disk buried in the woods, and this is the game that he finds on it. So you're basically looking at his footage. And he's recording himself playing the game, so you're basically playing as his let's play of this long lost cursed video game.
Yeah,
which I thought was pretty funny.
For sure, and the idea that the AI on the disc can see what files are on your computer then justifies his camera footage appearing in the game itself.
Exactly. Yeah. So I thought that's again that Frog Fraction-y type stuff. I liked quite a bit.
I still think that overstays its welcome also, though.
I mean, I think I definitely...
three or four and like a bunch of different videos each time.
There's a lot... again, I think this comes down to maybe you compress Act 2 or something like that, or, you know, you... I didn't grow as tired of it as you did, I think, but I definitely was like, okay, like I'm ready for more. Like, I'm kind of seeing where this is going, and so I'd rather see more progression.
Dude, we didn't even mention... There's so many mechanics, because there's even the one I forgot where the overmap is, like, up and down, like, north, south, east, west, walking digital game. Like, that's its own section, too.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, and I think that gets back to the more roguish element that the first act has of, like, branching paths. You can choose which way you go, and that's a little bit more... I don't know. The more I talk about it, the more I think that the second act is kind of the odd man out here.
I mean, there's a store in that section.
I know. Well, there's a store in the third act too, right? Like there's I mean, it's all there's a little bit of a build, but there's also just a little bit of a tangent for that JRPG section. I guess the story winds up where essentially one of the, you know, the in-game gods that you're fighting, the scribes, the robot learns that in order to basically be the dominant one, he can basically win and then trick someone into uploading the game to the internet, which then he can just go viral and live forever as like the dominant one, which I also thought was funny because...
PO3.
Yeah, it's like this is a game that was uploaded to the internet on Steam and, you know, it... virality is what helps these games take over, period. So like I thought that stuff was good. It, the meta of it was good, and just the idea of, you know, even the characters inside of the game realize that like we just need to destroy this game, we need to delete ourselves in order to do it. But then I was not quite clear on the kind of Game Funa connection slash the person that inevitably kills Luke Carter.
What were they there?
Why was he
filming that angle of his front door? I don't know.
Well, I think he was doing that to meet the person, right? You know, like he was, to me, that was like, oh, I'm just a YouTuber. I film everything, you know, like that makes a little bit more sense. You know?
All of that stuff felt to me like it felt like an amateur YouTube horror movie video, you know, like it didn't, it lost some of the, I mean, in a way it's far more unsettling to be in the cabin in the act one than to be with Luke Carter as he faces this sort of digital thing, you know.
I bet there was a cut of this where Luke's environment himself was more explored and it was a cabin.
Yeah, that could have been cool,
because even the surroundings of his in universe desk and everything, that it looks kind of foresty outside of his front yard and all that stuff, you know.
I mean, there are moments in, I think it's Act 2.5 or whatever, right, where right. It'll reference like his girlfriend, or you'll hear mm-hmm. Luke say like, "What the fuck?" or like, yeah. "What is that?" Right?
Mm-hmm.
I think if that had just been peppered through and we never really met him, right?
Right.
Maybe we encounter or we learn about it. Maybe we even get a video at the very, very end as an Easter egg, like after the credits or something.
Right.
But
right.
I think it. I don't think that him as a cipher for the player is very effective because I think it's some of the least, it seems more out of fiction than anything else, you know?
Mm.
Like, right. I think it saps it of some of the cooler horror elements.
Right. After playing, you know, 90% of the game and watching the last part of it, I was also not aware of the whole ARG that's happening around this shit.
Yeah.
Like I was not as aware of like the weird Nazi occultism that this game also has in it. Did you yeah. see any of that stuff when you were playing?
God, no. Well, and it references Hex, Mullen's previous game as
yeah.
well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, I was absolutely not aware of it. I mean, you and I talked about this when we talked about, what was it? Death's Door?
Uh-huh.
Like where there's references in that game to the previous game, and it feels like it's this artificial way of adding gravitas or conveying that like all of this has been planned or there's this right. like huge thing, and I don't know. I think it's really hard to pull off. You know,
right.
like they fucking Star Wars couldn't do it. I don't think you know most indie devs would be able to do it either. And again, I know a lot of people love this kind of shit. They get the kick out of it. By all means, like. Go to town if that's your cup of tea, but
right.
for me it just kind of saps it of it being able to stand on its own, you know.
Right.
I think
right.
more and more. I mean, maybe it's just because I'm old now, but I want something that is self-contained. I want something that doesn't feel the need to break the fourth wall in order to justify itself. Right. Like we can tell perfectly serviceable stories without trying to somehow convey that like the story itself extends into our own reality. Like I don't know.
Right.
Time and a place, and I say all of this, and I love weird books like House of Leaves and stuff, but like,
right.
I don't know. I think it's really challenging to pull off, and despite a lot of people loving Inscription, I don't think it pulls it off to my liking.
Yeah, I think it might be. I mean, weirdly, it might be what we're seeing as the creation of a genre. You know what you saw with Frog Fractions. Kind of busted open this whole genre of weird fourth wall shit. Kojima was yeah. kind of a precursor to a lot of that shit, you know, like he was the progenitor of a lot of, in the mainstream anyway, a lot of things that then really got fleshed out, and now
well yeah.
we just have more games that are like this now, you know.
Well, it's also part and parcel to modern day horror storytelling, right? You
That's
see
true.
It with yeah. film series like VHS or The mm-hmm. Purge, right?
Right.
Where there's every single film builds on and characters are retconned and you
right.
know, like all of this kind of stuff blends into these like larger arcs. Frog Fractions was the same, right? Like that
right.
became this huge multi-part story where there is like canon
right.
to with the different right. events, right? When right. what originally was a weird, creepy game with where you're watching different video cameras, you know?
Yeah.
I think that is, it's part and parcel to what expectations are around it. And I think to me, that's something that is, I know it satisfies a lot of people, but I kind of find disappointing when what I get is what I expect in a way, right? Mm. Like the game is far more in its, it leans far more into the genre of being a horror game, a modern day horror indie game, than
right.
it is interested in doing its own independent thing, if that makes sense. Like
right.
it feels like a game that is designed under the pressure of releasing something that can be eye-catching in that space, and I don't want to criticize the designer for doing so because that might be very interesting to them, or it might
yeah.
be what they deemed as necessary to really stand out. But in my current time, in my current life right now, I want something that is simpler, that is more removed, that is more elegant than
yeah.
I think what someone can achieve when they are trying to accomplish so much. And
right.
really, you know, make a splash on release in that space. Like, people were talking about Inscription day one. Like, there was a lot of people loving this game.
Yeah. Yeah. this ARG thing is crazy. They actually went to the coordinates in the game.
Oh, yeah.
and they found something, and they even like met the dev up there too. Like, I mean, there's just
hiding in the woods. Come to my cabin, play a game. It's Yu-Gi-Oh, but with swords.
I mean, it's just that's the other thing too. I didn't realize, especially that ending sequence was like directly Yu-Gi-Oh, and that, I mean, that must have been so fun to see. For people that are into Yu-Gi-Oh, that whole thing where he has the like battle tablet or whatever must have been such a fun nod, you know, to all of that
what
stuff.
A weird scene though, dude, to see like three-dimensional like wizards and stuff. It was like, this is the 15th different version of this. Like,
yes.
When will this stop? Like, when it was I think the biggest criticism or the biggest sign of me souring on this game was when this fiction was like now deleting the game. I was like, fucking hurry up, dude. Like, please just hurry up and delete this shit already. Or just destroy your fucking hard drive. Like, unplug the internet. I don't know.
It didn't actually delete the game, right?
No, because then you can like click on the old files, and there's like, again, people have found files where it's like, oh, PO3
the cursed
actually
Hitler stuff
it.
Or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's like, you know, winky face at the fact that you are playing the story that is actually the success story of PO3's attempts to upload stuff. So
not everyone is like Nier and actually deletes your save file.
I mean, look, Nier, I mean, this is a great example. Nier is the game that does do this expertly. I don't know. I'm curious. I feel like I should go back and listen to our Nier debrief after this conversation because I think Nier does it better in a lot of ways. One, it doesn't add two. There's new mechanics, but they're gradual.
Right.
And it's one at a time rather than like a bunch. Mm. And then it just feels like it's totally consistent throughout. Like every single setup and building and those themes, like the ultimate themes of Nier are seeded in everything. I mean, the horror elements and the story of this, like Luke Carter, is kind of seeded in the different ways that people mention one another. But there's an elegance to Nier that I don't think that this can achieve. But I mean, whatever. To completely different genres, completely different scales and budgets. So
I just need more sexy ladies in my...
Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
I just want to jump on and hang on a robot because that is always a blast.
I just want a robot to realize the crushing reality of what sapience truly is and then commit suicide.
I've talked to a lot of people that really did not like Nier and complained about Nier, and most of their criticism is the same criticism that I feel about this. You know, actually, the big difference, though, is Nier gets better the more you play.
That is the wild thing. And in a weird way, actually, I guess the arc is kind of similar in that first run-through of Nier is a very traditional action game in the way that the first act of this game is kind of a traditional deck-building game. It's just that I think the differences... are more elegantly handled in Nier. Like, because by the end of Nier, like, there's a run-through of Nier where you are playing a bullet hell game, like, all that's the true. Time. That's all you're doing. But
what a great game, Nier.
But, I mean, the way that they transition in and out of that, and the fact that they actually do mostly abandon the third-person action game for the bullet hell means that they're not trying to squish all the mechanics together. They're just taking the themes of them and then translating them to different mechanics, you know, whereas Inscription feels like it tries, especially at the end, where you have everything from the energy to the gems to the animals to the, you know, the robots, to, like, you have it all, and it tries to do it all, whereas maybe it shouldn't have, you know. Maybe to your point, they should have gone in reverse, you know.
Well, I also think that Inscription, pardon the pun, shows its hand...
Right,
you know, earlier than Nier does, right? I mean,
you could easily not even. Nier is fucking. That game is fucking genius. Like, there's, you could just fucking walk away from that game not knowing anything that comes after that, and just be like, okay, that was a pretty standard third person action game, 7 out of 10. You know, like, you could easily walk away. You know,
I mean, and that knowledge, right? It means that, like, as you know, because. I remember when you get to the credits and you're like blasting names in the bullet hell in the credits, or you get to that moment where you decide, like, okay, I'm going to delete my save file to help someone else, right?
Right.
It feels to me like that is the crescendo, right? It's all been leading to that moment where you make the decision to make that sacrifice because we're all in this together, because everything is a Strand game. And you know what I mean? Like, and those are the themes that you want to celebrate and cherish and the things that you value, right? Like,
right.
It builds to that singular moment. But Inscription, conversely, builds towards its own eradication. Like, I don't think it culminates in, there's no moment where you go, ah, this is it, right? This is right. The theme, or this is the culmination. You right. would think that it would culminate in, like, oh, this is the horror crescendo, right? Like, right. this is the moment that is the most terrifying. But right. what is that moment? It's the moment where, like, maybe Luke Carter gets shot. Maybe when PO3, like, says, hey, I'm going to go out, right? But,
right.
I mean,
right.
my criticism of it taking forever to actually delete the game is a perfect example of the game wanting to extend its time span. Like, it wants yeah. to be there unnecessarily long. And, again, I think you can make an argument that that's the point, and PO3 is, you know, holding on to
right, right.
the survival in that moment, and
yeah.
I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, there's just something about the way that I think Nier paces itself that yeah. Inscription gets horribly wrong in that right. same pacing.
Which is ironic, because I'm pretty sure Nier is, like, far longer than
that's
Inscription.
True. That's very true.
You know, like, so, but pacing is all contextual, essentially, you know, like, yeah. and what you're willing to go along for the journey on really depends on the genre to right. genre, you know, differences.
I say all that, and still I probably will never play Nier again, right? It's not a game that I am excited to go back to, right?
No.
You've uncorked that bottle. And the same with Death yeah. Stranding, in a way, right? Like,
yeah.
You've
yeah.
I would probably watch someone play it, or I would read a synopsis, or I'd listen to myself talk about it, but
yes.
it's not like Bloodborne, where I'm just going to be playing this once a year, right?
Yeah. There's something so poetic about deleting your save at the end. I mean, like, how could you... How could you go back, you know?
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Well, cool. Well, I'm glad that we played this game, because I think it will show up on a lot of people's lists at the end of the year, and it'll be interesting to see if it basically maintains its heat for the next yeah. month and a half or so, because there's definitely people that are talking a lot about it.
We have a category every year in the Gameys.
Oh, yeah.
That is called... what is it called? It's called... The Most Superfluous Game Award brought oh, yeah. to you by
brought
Death Stranding.
To, yeah, presented by Death Stranding.
Presented
yeah.
by Death Stranding. I think that Inscription has to have at least like two entries. Like, this is a clear front runner for that category this year.
I think Inscription probably is going to show up a couple times on some of these categories. Yeah, but yeah, yes. Yeah. yeah.
It'll be so in a way, it will be on our lists.
Yeah.
Just probably not in our top game of the year.
Cool. Well, let's leave it there for now. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is the website. If you want to solve the experience points ARG, leave us
oh
a five-star
God.
Review.
What
we'll
if we
respond.
Were doing that for like a 15-year ARG?
Dude, like, there's all kinds. Man, ARGs are fat. ARGs is like, in another world, that's what I did my master's in, is like studying ARGs. But I just don't have the fucking patience. I never have. So maybe it's not me getting older. I think it's me just having a limited degree of patience.
Oh my God. Well, a mystery to be solved next week then, I suppose.
Yep.
All right, everyone. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Ciao. Every time.